everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say welcome to you all, and let me give you a bit of a rundown about the Animation Podcast. It is a podcast that talks about animation, believe it or not. So if you are here to expect that I will be talking about all the different sorts of cheeses, well, sadly, you will be disappointed. But anyways, specifically, this week, I'll be talking about the big news that happened during that time. Now, anyways, for this episode, I will say that this is a massive coincidence. I swear to God, I did not expect that this would tie in so well with what's going on right now. As I'm recording this, yesterday, it was the release date of the Angry Birds movie, and I swear to God, I didn't plan this to work out so well, but today we have a bit of a video game themed animation podcast where we're starting to see how video games and animation are starting to, you know, collide together and work together to see what we can bring up with stories in animation. And I don't mean the movies themselves, but I mean in terms of the news. And again, this is just purely coincidence. I did not manage to work this out with how the Angry Birds movie is released. But anyways, going into the news, what we got is that Nintendo wants to enter into the movie industry and possibly even the animation industry with some of their popular properties. Then we will be looking how Steam could actually be a viable source or not for distributing films, and if it can be a good online service in the ranks of Netflix and stuff like that. Then we will be talking about once again about Ratchet and Clank, and we will pretty much be forgetting about one of the previous stories that I've talked about, and basically at this point the movie is a flop, basically, by every means necessary. And then we will be looking back once again into the Red Turtle and how it got picked up by Sony Pictures Classics. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, first of all, let's go into the big story that we got this week. And this is actually quite interesting because not only am I a huge animation fan, but I am also a huge Nintendo fan. So seeing how these two things can collide together is just nothing but purely fascinating for me. Now, apparently, according to Asahi News, with an interview of the company's president, Tatsumi Kimishima, Nintendo apparently wants to enter into the movie industry, like I previously stated before, but possibly animation. Now, Kimishima has stated that he wants to bring some of the more popular properties of Nintendo and wants to make a feature film out of them. And it could be possible that it could be an animated film, considering that he did stated that chances are it's not going to be a live action film. So that pretty much states that, okay, maybe it's a class, maybe it's going to be animated. And also, Kimishima did stated, if you guys are wondering when it's going to happen, that it could happen between now up to 5 years from now. So within that time span, we could be seeing a legit Nintendo movie. However, I would like to state, though, that no, Nintendo is not just going to give their properties to an animation studio or something like that. They pretty much want to do a bit like what Ubisoft is doing, or maybe like what the Angry Birds movie is doing with Ravio, where basically Nintendo wants to make the movie by themselves. They want to do like the whole nitty-gritty of it, and they just want to look into major distributors to go and put it all around the world. So basically, where others want to come in, like Universal, Paramount, Disney, Fox, and all those companies, They're just going to be going around distributing it. Kind of like, or actually the best example would be like what DreamWorks had been doing before they got purchased by Comcast. So basically at this point, Nintendo just wants to make their own feature films, and for now, we don't know which ones they're going to start with. Now, keep in mind, though, Nintendo does have a bit of a history when it comes to movies. Of course, we know about the little incident that occurred in 1993 with the Super Mario Brothers movie, but then also they have released some animated films beforehand, believe it or not. At least in North America, the Pokemon films, five of them to be exact, have been released in theaters. Now, technically, this could be a bit of an argument if that does actually count, considering that Pokemon is a property of Nintendo, but then again, it's based more on the anime more so than the games themselves. With that said, there hasn't really been any other stuff afterwards. I mean, technically you could count the Wizards into it, but it's more of one, it's pretty much acts like one big commercial for Super Mario Bros. 3. And also there is Wreck-It Ralph, considering that there are some not only Nintendo characters, but there are some a lot of other video game characters that appeared as well, including Q-Bert, Bowser, Dr. Robotnik, or Eggman, or whoever you want to call him, M. Bison, and all different sorts of video game characters. But now it seems that Nintendo really wants to make an official Nintendo movie. And honestly, for me, I feel like this could be pretty interesting. And if they are going to make their own animated features, I would actually be pretty excited, because if you guys have seen the cutscenes that you would find in a game like Super Smash Bros., like, they can make some really cool stuff. But the biggest thing is that, can they go and incorporate a good script with it? Because that's kind of the big catch. The only games that I know that Nintendo made where the story does have a bit of a significance is with The Legend of Zelda, or even Metroid to a certain extent. Other games like Mario, Donkey Kong, Kirby, and all those, maybe Pokemon and maybe Star Fox has a bit of a story, but with those films, the what makes Nintendo so big is not really the complex storytelling, it's more so of the gameplay and stuff like that. How are they going to incorporate it into feature films will be a bit of a mystery, but even Kimishima did state that he's not necessarily going to start with Mario, but they would like to start with an IP that everyone knows about. Which, with that said, I think a Legend of Zelda movie could highly be possible at this point, and it could be a great option to start off with. Now, I know that in terms of The Legend of Zelda, it seems something that looks... That seems more appropriate to start off with a live-action film, since it has a bit more of a realistic style, more so than something like Pokemon or Mario or something like that. But I don't know. With The Legend of Zelda, who says you can't make an animated film out of it? Like, it can probably work. It all depends on a good script, but... with that said, are we also going to be incorporating some well-known writers, directors, and stuff like that? Is it going to be purely at Nintendo that they're going to do it? Or are they going to bring in some big names into it right there? Like, are they going to bring in Brad Bird to make a Mario movie? Are they going to bring in Tim Burton to make... I don't know. If they're going to bring Tim Burton to do something like Metroid or The Legend of Zelda. Imagine that, actually. Imagine Tim Burton's The Legend of Zelda. Like maybe the script will be questionable, but my god, it could probably look really cool. But yeah, who knows? But this does open up to a lot of possibilities. If this movie would actually become a huge success, then who knows, maybe we can actually have a Nintendo Cinematic Universe. Actually, coincidentally enough, there was a news that was reported a while ago that apparently there would be a Pokemon live-action film, and I don't know if the auction did actually happen, or I don't know if it's done yet, but either Legendary Pictures or Warner Brothers would like to get their hands on the rights in order to make a live-action Pokemon movie. So maybe that could probably tie in into that. So imagine if they can go make a big Nintendo Cinematic Universe where they're going to bring in all these characters and eventually have the one big crossover film to be the big Super Smash Brothers movie. So that could definitely be fascinating, but with that said, I do have a feeling that they're going to start off with The Legend of Zelda, because next to Mario, it's their most popular franchise that it's one of their most popular franchise that they got, plus the fact that it's easy to turn into a feature film considering that it does have a story into it. So you could pretty much start off with Ocarina of Time, since a lot of people did state that it is the Citizen Kane of video games. So of course, like, you could start off with Legend of Zelda, then maybe grow from there and experiment with other stuff. Maybe do, like, maybe see how the Pokemon movie would go. Maybe also incorporate a Mario movie, or maybe even a Kirby movie, or, like, a Star Fox film, or Metroid, and all that kind of stuff. It's interesting. I would like to know more about what Nintendo has in store with these, Nintendo movies. It's going to be very fascinating, and as a Nintendo fan, I'll definitely be interested to check those out. So we'll just have to wait and see what will be the first official Nintendo movie, when it will be released, but in sometime 5 years down the road or something like that. I don't know. We'll see. Okay, so for our next story, we are going to be discussing about Steam. Now, for those of you who don't know, Steam is pretty much a video game service. Basically at this point, Steam is best described as the Netflix of video games, where anybody with a PC can go and get some games there. You can go and mostly download indie video games. And just, you can go and play from there, and you can get whatever you want. And you might have heard some jokes about, like, these massive discounts that people end up buying, but they don't end up playing. Yeah, that's pretty much where it is. It's developed by Valve, and it has grown so huge ever since, and it has made a lot of games extremely popular. Without Steam, there would be no games like Slenderman or Five Nights at Freddy's. But it seems that Steam would like to enter into the movie business by distributing some films. Apparently, it has been announced that Lionsgate is making a partnership with Valve to distribute 100 films onto their library. Now, keep in mind with Lionsgate, in terms of animation, they don't really have a lot. I mean, now, like, in recent years, they've only released, like, Shaun the Sheep movie and Norm of the North, so that's not pretty much interesting. But apparently, Cartoon Brew has got note that apparently there will be one animated feature, an independent animated film, that will be going into Steam, and it's called Padak. So it's going to be interesting to see how big Padak can be, and if it will find some popularity on Steam. And it also included a trailer of it. And, you know, I thought it was going to be a harmless animated film, something a bit cute. It is made in North Korea. And when you look at the poster, you just see this happy fish, just splashing, like, just jumping out of the water. And behind him is the restaurant where, like, him and his fishes are kept. And at first, it seems like it's going to tell part of the story of Finding Nemo, where all the fishes are in a glass case and they're in a restaurant. But oh my god, when I saw this trailer, it's not that it's a bad movie. I'm not going to judge it like that. It doesn't, like, this could actually, like, honestly, this seems like it could be pretty good. But how can I put Padak? Well, what Watership Down is to bunnies and what Felidae is to cats, Padak is to fish. It like, just the trailer alone, it gets freaking brutal. Like, it really did. And actually, I just discovered this, that apparently It was like it's been like it's already a bit old. It was already released in 2012 in South Korea. Well, that's actually pretty interesting. But it didn't really do well when it was released in South Korea. It was stated that it only made less than $75,000. So hopefully we'll find a new audience onto Steam. And that really does make me think a bit if Steam would actually be considered a good movie service. In the same veins of, like, Netflix or ShowMe or Crack TV or stuff like that. Like, would it be good to go and discover new films? And honestly, I'm not 100% sure. Because if Steam is going to enter that business, then first they need to build themselves to go and distribute movies. Like, to be a bit like iTunes in a sense. Because the way that I see it, maybe saying that Steam wants to be like Netflix, maybe that's not the right way to put it. Instead, Steam would like to be like iTunes. Because as we all know, iTunes is the number one place where people would go and get music. Where they go and buy music. But at the same time, they also offer movies. And a lot of people do that at the same time. So maybe Steam is going to do the same thing where people can get video games, but also you can go and get movies. And it does have some potential. Like a lot of independent animated features can actually go on Steam and they can go distributed from there. So it can have it can have a bit of life. It could go find its audience from there. So it could definitely have a chance. But first, it really needs to build itself up. It is going a bit in one step in the right direction by bringing in Lionsgate and have their library. Because Lionsgate does have some notable films under their belt. Like, some people can go and get The Hunger Games through Steam now. But it'll probably have to do a lot more. Like, maybe it'll have to do some deals with Fox or Sony or Universal to really bring in the feature films. Not to really get the movies, but more to bring in attention that Steam is also offering movies as much as they're offering games. As for independent films, well, maybe they will be lost a bit in the kerfuffle, but keep in mind though, a lot of independent games came from Steam, and they found some massive success. So maybe for animated features, they could do the same thing from there. As for Padak, we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. Maybe in the right hands, at the right moment, at the right time, maybe someone will talk about Padak and it'll find a lot of attention and a lot of people will be interested into seeing how it is. You never know. It could be interesting. Like, Padak could have a lot of potential to find the right audience. And I can imagine, like, fans of Felidae and Watership Down, they will get into Padak. Like, they will feel at home. But in terms of Steam, like, if it can be a good place to find independent animated features as much as it is to find independent video games, that will take a lot of time. And that will take a lot of patience. And that will probably take a lot of right circumstances if people will be willing to look into a movie like Padak and, you know, give it a chance to get to put it in the sunlight and to pretty much show to the world that you can go and get movies like Padak on Steam. But with that said, only time will tell if Steam can be a reliable source for independent animated films, as Padak will be released onto Steam on June 6th of this year. Now our next story. I swear to God, I tried hard, guys. I really tried to avoid a Ratchet and Clank story, but they just keep coming up. And this one is going to pretty much annihilate one of the previous stories that I talked about. Now, in a previous episode of the Animation Podcast, I did discuss about how Ratchet and Clank could possibly find its money. Maybe it'll get its money back through stuff like Blu-rays and, merchandising and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't seem to be the case. Considering that Ratchet & Clank has yet to even surpass $10 million at the box office, it is ultimately a flop. And because of that, Rainmaker is going to pay. So apparently Rainmaker did announce that they are writing down $10 million due to the disappointment of Ratchet and Clank. Now, Rainmaker did play a big part, and apparently 63% of the production costs actually came from Maker or from Rainmaker, more so than Sony and PlayStation, that division where they pretty much made the Ratchet and Clank games. So, and it's stated here, once again, at Cartoon Brew, the $10 million write-down includes the studio's propositional sale, a share of advertising expenses, estimated between $1 and $4 million, and will be applied against net income in the first quarter of 2016. Now, here is the part, however, that is pretty much noteworthy about why it's in the news. And it's pretty much a bit similar to last time, where one of the writers is pretty much pinning the blame on the others. Now, apparently, Michael Heffron, the president at Rainmaker, he is not blaming himself, he's not blaming the movie, he's not taking responsibility onto Ratchet and Clank. Where does he pin the blame? Of course, he puts it on freaking Disney. Using this quote here, "We are obviously disappointed with the North American opening release results," he said in a press release. "The huge success of The Jungle Book and continuing strength of Zootopia represented a loss of a large portion of the family market. Although support from the Ratchet and Clank fan base has been positive," yeah, right. Not from what I'm seeing, they're pretty much split. The turnout of the film was not sufficient to overcome the highly competitive marketplace for the opening weekend of the film. Now, keep in mind, though, during the time of Ratchet and Clank's release, it was pretty much in a really sticky situation. It was during the time when The Jungle Book was really big at the box office, and also Zootopia was a bit dying down, but it was still getting a bit of money, and Ratchet and Clank was pretty much released the week before Captain America: Civil War. Now, with that said, may I ask a little question? Can somebody at frickin' Rainmaker be a frickin' adult about Ratchet and Clank? Oh my god, seriously? Like, it's enough that one of the writers is pretty much going out there and pinning the blame on the other writer and the director for pretty much making Ratchet and Clank a bad movie. But now we got this guy saying that, oh, we pretty much the movie is a failure because of Disney. Oh, it's not our fault. Yes, it is your freaking fault, because there are so many factors that got into it. And, like, once again, if I can go into the comments section, like, a lot of them got into the reason to why. There really isn't much interesting comments this time. No, but, there are many factors to why Ratchet and Clank is a failure, and it has nothing to do with Disney. This is because of Rainmaker and the film itself. Because, number one, like, a movie based on Ratchet and Clank, of course, it's only going to appeal to the fan base more so than to any newcomers. You're not really going to find anybody who's going to come in and try to expect and have an introduction to Ratchet and Clank. Like, oh, okay, instead of wasting hours on playing the games, let's start off with the movie and see how that goes. You're barely going to get that market. And secondly, the marketing, oh god, it's almost non-existent. Now, of course, the production of Ratchet and Clank was pretty wonky, and apparently they finished last year, and they did some advertising during that time as well, but this year, they barely even tried. There was little to none that pretty much, that made people aware about Ratchet and Clank. Like, sure, you can go and blame Disney, but it's not because of Disney that pretty much the Ratchet and Clank advertisement is hiding. This is pretty much marketing to the point that it feels like Rainmaker didn't even frickin' try. Like, I don't think, like, probably there are so many people out there that didn't even know that there is a Ratchet and Clank movie out there. And nowadays, it's pretty much gone. Now that the Angry Birds movie is released, the Ratchet and Clank movie is no longer in theaters. There's no point to put it up in theaters anyways. It's not like anybody is going to go and see it at this point. And, Also, there is another factor that plays. It's the fact that the movie sucks. That is also another big factor. And when a movie is bad, like, there will be word of mouth going that the movie is not that good and it's not even worth it. And even in terms of Ratchet & Clank, even in terms of Ratchet & Clank fans, like I previously stated, people are so split into it. It's either the fans either love it or they hate it and say that it's a misrepresentation. I, like, in my review of the film, I have received so many fans stating how this movie sucks and how it's such a terrible misrepresentation of the film. And, you know, with this word of mouth that it doesn't even appeal to the fans, it's just, like, basically, it has no one to appeal to. Because clear, like, as I, like, with my previous statements, it's a movie that's mostly geared for the fans, and even at that point, some of the fans are not even interested in it, or at least they didn't even like it. So this bad word of mouth is pretty much poisoning the whole thing. So basically, you barely got anything with it. It's your own fault that you pretty much destroyed Ratchet & Clank. And at this point, if you're going to continue this kind of thing, like if you're going to make a Sly Cooper movie, well, chances are you might throw that out of the window, because that might happen again, because like you might repeat history and you're going to lose another $10 million out of it. And you know, like, is there even a point to continue with this Ratchet & Clank thing? Like, I don't mean the games in general, but if you're going to continue pointing the blame, like, just take freaking responsibility, man. You can't just go out there and blame Disney for your errors, or you can't point the fingers at other places. You need to point the finger at yourself. At this point, what Rainmaker should do, they need to learn from their mistakes with what they did with Ratchet & Clank. They can't go out and blame Disney. They can't just say, oh, let's just release our movie somewhere else far away from Disney, because you know what? You can't, because now that Disney has properties and companies like Pixar, Disney Animation, Marvel, Star Wars, it's nearly impossible to avoid Disney at this point. Like, it's almost as if every month they're going to have a movie or two be released. What you have to do is that now you got to learn to work hard on the writing. Not the writing, sorry about that. You gotta go and work hard on the marketing, make sure that people are aware about your next movie, and make sure that your movie is good, because that's another factor. Because at this point, when it comes to Rainmaker, their reputation is going pretty downhill. Now at this point, like, people know that Rainmaker is now associated with movies such as not only Ratchet & Clank, but also Escape from Planet Earth. So the Rainmaker name is not really that appealing. And even at that, there are some other movies that they've made, but they're not as appealing as well. Like, what they've recently done is just, they've done open season sequels for Sony Pictures Animation, and soon they're going to release Surf's Up 2, a sequel that nobody has asked for, but then again, you could say that to all the sequels to Sony Pictures Animation. But, you know, it's just, there's no reputation. You need to learn, that's the thing with Rainmaker. They need to learn from their mistakes, and they need to learn to hire people that knows that they need to accept their mistakes. Like, they need to hire good people, not just people who are good at their jobs, but people who are good at accepting their mistakes. They cannot hire another person like TJ Fixman, who's going to go pin the blame on the others and saying that, oh, right now I'm doing great because I'm going to be working at Sony and Disney and blah blah blah. Which at this point, I'm surprised he didn't lose his job already at those places. Honestly, at this point, you can't, like, honestly, with Ratchet & Clank, if it were done in the right hands, like, you could have done a bit better than Zootopia. That's honestly the pathetic part about Ratchet & Clank, is that during the time of its release on its opening weekend, you failed to even surpass Zootopia. And come on, man, like, Zootopia at that time had, like, what? Around, like, it made about $7 million during that weekend, and it was its ninth weekend or somewhere like that. You know, you could have at least, you know, you could have done better, and you could have at least surpassed Zootopia. Now, everybody knows for a fact that you wouldn't be able to go and surpass something like The Jungle Book, but at least you could have done so much better if you put in a lot more effort into that. Because seriously, blaming other people like Disney or the other people that worked onto the film is going to be pointless. You're not going to grow your studio if you're going to keep doing that. So honestly, next time, learn to admit your mistakes and do frickin' better. Now for our next story, we are going back into The Red Turtle. Now previously I talked about this, the collaboration between Wild Bunch and Studio Ghibli. They just released their trailer last week and it actually looks pretty gorgeous. And apparently, it happened so quick, but apparently now it's got picked up. Apparently, Sony Pictures Classics has now picked up The Red Turtle for the North and Latin America release. Now, when the film will be released, I have no idea, but it has been reported that apparently Cannes has already screened the film, and also it will also be premiering at the 40th annual Annecy International Animation Film Festival. And if you guys don't know about the story, it is said here, according to Deadline, the dialogue-free picture centers on a man shipwrecked on a tropical island inhabited by turtles, crabs, and birds. When he builds a wooden raft, he is confronted with a red turtle. The story then follows the milestones of his life on the island, which includes meeting a woman and starting a family. And in the last episode, I previously stated how it does have a bit of connections with Studio Ghibli, where this seems more like a life story in the similar veins of something like My Neighbor Totoro, Kiki's Delivery Service, or The Wind Rises, where we pretty much look into the life of this one person. The only catch is that this guy is now in a deserted island. But it's actually very interesting now that Sony Pictures Classics has immediately picked up The Red Turtle to go and go out there and distribute it. And for those of you who are a bit unfamiliar with Sony Pictures Classics, that's Sony's independent group. Like, those are the people that go out and distribute the independent films. And they've previously done so with animated films. They actually distributed the Sylvain Chaumet films, like The Triplets of Belleville and the 2010 The Illusionist. And also they did the same thing with Waltz with Bashir, which honestly, it's one of the best animated features that I've ever seen. Like, it is so amazing. Seriously, if you have not seen Waltz with Bashir, definitely do so. And I guess the best way to put it, it's pretty much Sony Pictures and Sony Pictures Animation for smart people. But yeah, it's actually very fascinating that Sony Pictures would immediately go and grab their hands onto The Red Turtle, and with good reason. It does look like it can definitely have a chance to go out there and pretty much be big, not just in festivals, but also in the award shows. I previously stated that this could possibly be one of those films that you're going to hear a lot at award shows, and this is going to be like that one or two independent animated features that's going to be nominated at the Oscars, that's going to be out there competing against stuff like Zootopia and maybe Moana and Finding Dory. We'll just have to wait and see on that. But yeah, it does look pretty interesting, and honestly, I can't wait to see the release date. They didn't announce yet when it's going to be released in North America, but they did say they did state though that it will be released in Japan on September 17th. So maybe we're going to get it in the fall. And now it's time that we go into Matt's Pick of the Week, and for this one, I just need to say something that. Originally, my intention was that I was about to go and talk about the trailer of Sausage Party, but there really isn't much to talk about. It was basically the Green Band trailer where they removed all the swearing and instead they put in a few brand new clips to it, but there really isn't much to talk about right there. Like, I've already talked about the Sausage Party trailer, at least the Red Band one, in a previous episode of the Animation Podcast, but this one came in so sudden, and this made a massive impact to everyone that I just can't just glance over it or just, you know, just like briefly mention it. Like, I need to pretty much discuss this in full. And it is unfortunately with deep regret that Alan Young has passed away at the age of 96. And that's probably the best thing, that's probably the good thing that I can mention about this is that Alan Young has certainly lived a good, full life at the age of 96. My God, he definitely is a real trooper. Now, if you go around websites like Variety, Deadline, or The Hollywood Reporter, you'll find that a lot of them will state that his most popular role that he has done, what everybody knows him for, is playing Wilbur in the show Mr. Ed. But in this case, for the animation podcast, a lot of people will recognize him more for another prominent role that he has played for so long. And with that said, Alan Young is actually pretty much well known as the role of Scrooge McDuck for many different Disney projects. Now, using my source here from Variety, apparently he was the fourth official voice to play the role of Scrooge McDuck. Which is stated that since Dallas McKennon did it in the 1960s, but I think everybody can agree that Alan Young is the most prominent role to voice Scrooge McDuck. He has pretty much appeared in the most popular, the most popular projects that featured Scrooge McDuck. He was Scrooge in Mickey's Christmas Carol, he was Scrooge in the DuckTales series, and he was also Scrooge in DuckTales the movie, Treasures of the Lost Lamp. But not only that, he also provided the voice in several other works, including Mickey Mouse Works, Raw Toonage, The House of Mouse, and also on several video games later on, including Disney Think Fast, Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep, Disney Magical World, and also DuckTales Remastered, which was actually not too long ago, believe it or not. And with that said, he has also provided the voice of many other roles in other TV shows and other specials. He was also the voice of Flaversham in The Great Mouse Detective, but also he provided voices in shows like Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo, Battle of the Planets, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, The Incredible Hulk, The Dukes, the animated series of The Smurfs, and the animated series of Alvin and the Chipmunks, and the TV movie The Flintstones Family Christmas, and he also played Haggis McHaggis in The Ren and Stimpy Show. And and this is only his animated works, because he has appeared in so many other works as well. He is not just a prominent voice actor, but he is also a very prominent actor. And honestly, this is very similar to how Wayne Allwine is Mickey Mouse and how I've grown up with that Mickey all my life. Alan Young is pretty much the definitive Scrooge McDuck, and he really was such a trooper throughout the whole time. And he did such an amazing job with it as well. Like, when you think of projects like Mickey's Christmas Carol or even DuckTales or any of those projects, like, he is the definitive Scrooge McDuck. And, like, you just keep hearing him from time to time. Even in something like The Great Mouse Detective, like, you could definitely tell it was him. You could definitely tell how he was. Like, you can hear a bit of that Scrooge McDuck onto Flaversham. And I remember when I played DuckTales Remastered, like, you could definitely hear how he was certainly old. Like, you can hear the age that Alan Young was over 90 when he did it, but he was still a trooper, still going out there being Scrooge McDuck for this one little project. And not to mention how so many other voice actors did come back. Even June Foray came back onto DuckTales Remastered to play Magica Dispel. And, honestly, when it came... pretty much when it came to Scrooge McDuck, it was always with Dallas McKennon. And, you know, it's gonna be very hard, you know, to find another voice actor and to, you know, adjust to his voice. Because basically, Alan Young defined who Scrooge McDuck was. He really did. And honestly, like, this is, like, I can imagine this is going to be a sad Christmas for many, because when it comes to Mickey's Christmas Carol, a lot of people could even argue that it's one of the best adaptations of a Christmas Carol there ever is. Like, right up there with the original book. This is mostly considering how it is. Like, it's short, it's on to the point, it sticks to the heart of the story, so, like, it all works out. But I can imagine this Christmas is going to be a pretty dark one. Like, a lot of people will be putting up, a Mickey's Christmas Carol, and, like, tears will be shed, not just for Tiny Tim, but also for Scrooge. And I could definitely tell you, Alan Young has certainly left a massive legacy for that, not just at Disney, but also for many other projects. And for that, I will certainly miss Alan Young. Definitely a great Scrooge McDuck. And with that said, Alan, say hi to Wayne for me. And with that said, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. Just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or another podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be great. And if you have listened to this episode on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Or if you like, you can also share a little memory of one of Alan Young's roles. Like, what do you remember most about Alan Young? Leave a little legacy and your thoughts on that in the comment section. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!